Now, we're going to begin. It's 1 minute over the half hour, so we're going to go right into the second side of broadcast number 628, December 19th, 1983, because I want to cover a lot on Grenada. That is the biggest story in the news. As I say, Rebel 2 and 3 will go to press without it. I don't care. I'm working every week. I'm turning in the material to Larry Flynt down there where he is. I was in touch with the person who's in charge of him, called yesterday, and I won't send anything more down to Rebel. I'll send it to Larry, and I'll just keep writing. And when he's out, he can have my material, and they're going to print the kind of trash that they did. I got a copy of the Granada story. I went down to L.A., and I wasn't going to go to the office of Rebel. I told you, he called me and said, come down. So this last Tuesday, I went. And by then, he was in the federal prison at Terminal Island, and I wasn't going. And then he called the Rebel office and said, have May come over. And I went over there, and I got a copy of the story in Rebel 2 of the person who replaced my article. Now, there's a conflict of interest there because the decision not to put my story in was made by somebody who works with a person in the East whose story is so bad that I'm going to outline it and do a critique of what they decide to publish and then outline what I sent there and send it to Larry himself because he knows my work, he knows the quality of my work, and if I have to deal that way, I'll just not work with them at all, or I'll deal with Larry Flynt. And a lot of people say, be careful and stay away from the whole place, it's dangerous. I'm not opening my door to them, but they know where you are. I'll have to make the decision in a few weeks whether I even want to do it. If Larry goes over their head, that makes them mad. And obviously, there is an intent to put things in there that Mae Russell isn't going to write, and that isn't why the Rebel was started. He wanted me in there every single week. But I'm so furious at the way the whole thing was handled that, as I say, I wasn't going to go over there, but because he was nice enough, and he's confined, to call there and ask me, I was in town, to go there, I did go to the office, and we'll do more on that now. But I'm not stopping my work on Grenada. I'm working just as hard as I would if I knew him or didn't know him. And I want to give you some of the top stories because that's a microcosm. Everyone involved with a Grenada operation could be involved with the takeover of America, even at the Olympics, because Mr. Califano, who was head of health education and welfare when Sir Eric Gehry was kicked out by Maurice Bishop, was working on the garden plot with Ramsey Clark, who is the attorney for Bernard Cord, who killed Maurice Bishop and was paid by Robert Vesco. They worked with Ronald Reagan when he was governor, and the garden plot is a long, complicated story planned in Atlanta, Georgia, for the takeover of America. And there they are down again. He was governor a while back. Now he's the president, and these people are involved in that tiny island. And the care that they've given and the role that they've played is something that we may be getting on our heads with the least excuse of a bomb or a nuclear explosion, sacrifice one city and tie up all of America. Hitler did it in Germany. They bombed the Reichstag. They took a building, just like you bombed the Capitol. And that was the end of all the liberties. He was elected in every city, every jail, every newspaper, every college, every professor, every hospital, every decision of every person's life in Germany was made because a man had set off a bomb on the Reichstag that later was proven to be a provocateur, just like a few Germans dressed in Polish uniforms and came across the border towards Germany, and it opened up a war that cost the Russians 20 million, that cost the world in general 80 million dead or displaced. So that one act, your life, your security, your savings, your banks, they collected banks, they took people out of homes, they shipped them out of places. The invasion of Grenada, where they said every Cuban had to leave the island, computers are set up, the police state tactics have to be more than for 100,000 native population. Now, some of the highlight stories that have come up since I did Grenada story 2 weeks ago, London Observer, Sir Eric Gehry's return adds to the island's fears. It's about the abrupt departure of Mr. Rushford, Tony Rushford, who was supposed to stay in control in the government. He left, and the impending arrival of Sir Eric Gehry, He was a maitre d' of a nightclub, and I had that on the air and in the article, a maitre d' who worked his way up a goon squad, who collected items of Mr. Pinochet, who helped make his army, who was close to the friends of South Korea. He has an academic gown worn at a South Korean university. Grenadians remember him at the United Nations with a commission to study flying saucers, which is the least of what he did. But he was a vicious man who worked with, he said he had animal skulls around them he used for animal practice and so forth and so on. Now, they're afraid of Gary's return. They're afraid of it. That's what America's leaving. Sir Eric Gary coming back to the island. He's the one that goes to the United Nations to Peter Byrne, who worked for Jimmy Carter, and says, get Carter to help me. They go to Mr. Califano, who worked with the Bay of Pigs. I talked about that. And the CIA assassination teams. And then Mr. Henry Kissinger and Lord Peter Carrington from London set up in Barbados the wheels to kill Bishop. Now, it's a few years later, and Mr. Eric Gary is coming back. Another story out of the Chicago Tribune and the Houston Post, it's like a bad dream. It's a story of Anne Bishop, Maurice Bishop's sister, and she tells how her father was gunned down in the streets and was a national martyr. My brother was gunned down, and she said, I visited my brother 2 days before he was killed, and he said, I'm going to kill me. He's good. After my father, I was always worried that they would kill me. I thought it would be mercenaries or the CIA, frankly. I never thought it would be best friends of his, people he practically lived with. And they talk about her brother's executioner and somebody like Bernard Cord. Well, everybody has a price, and NBC News had the story, and I'll repeat the exact date, how Bernard Cord was paid by Robert Vesco, and how Vesco, the resorts will come back there. Vesco will have a place for dope dealing, and his best friend betrayed him. That's why it's dangerous working down in L.A. a little bit, and I wonder, and I'll tell you, people are afraid, because even if you have a friend who stands by you that will publish what you print, if the people who get it out don't want you, even your friends can't help you, and particularly when your friends are in trouble. They can be bent, so there's a dangerous situation, and I have to be aware of that. Another story of New Solidarity. Will the chief appeaser, Mr. Peter Carrington, Lord Peter Carrington, head NATO? And this goes into the not only the Henry Kissinger Carrington Association that Representative Henry Gonzalez eloquently spoke about exactly 1 month of the day before the invasion, where he talks about Kissinger being a hired gun. Incidentally, Charles Spear said he's sending Henry Gonzalez the transcripts of these tapes. So I want to officially thank you. You can get the back broadcast. I'll send them to you. You are a hero to speak about the State Department being leased to Kissinger and Carrington Associates. Now, this article goes into the Kissinger-Carrington links to narcotics in the Golden Crescent, not in Southeast Asia, in the Afghan-Pakistan connection in the Middle East. And also it says Carrington has been linked to a sex scandal breaking in Britain involving the procurement of young boys and sexual abuse by diplomats. Many of you read that they're changing the staff at Buckingham Palace and the use of these little boys. It says on November 24th, a member of Parliament, Jeffrey Dickens, a member of the Tory faction, opposed to Carrington's policies and revealed a dossier containing evidence of a pedophile ring of which he operated for years out of Buckingham Palace and the Foreign Office, the office Carrington headed. The pedophilia scandal involves Carrington's close associate, former Home Secretary William Whitelaw, and as yet unnamed members of the Foreign Service. They have an organization called PIE, P-I-E, Pederasty Information Exchange, which provides young boys to diplomats with Henry Kissinger's reputed proclivities. Now, this is about Kissinger, Carrington. Is he going to be the head of NATO? Then Wall Street Journal has a story, December the 12th, new NATO chief irks the hardliners. Lord Carrington is too soft. They want a hard, they think he is appeasing the Soviet Union, and he may favor the Soviet Union as against the Atlantic Alliance. The Atlantic Alliance is critical because he is breaking up with NATO, he would break up the relationship and encouragement of the NATO countries that got along, and he wants a stronger European interest within NATO working with each other. Now, that's exactly what Adolf Hitler had in his plans, and if Henry Kissinger is a Nazi. Break America against Great Britain. And the article in the Wall Street Journal says that a lot of people are worried about what Carrington will do, but it seems that what Carrington's doing is exactly what Adolf Hitler dreamed of with the help of Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer. New Solidarity has an editorial, Stop the Carrington Coup. The Carrington policy is dangerous, and it goes into the Queen and Lord Peter and Henry the K's policies. And it said they're not exactly a secret in the military and intelligence communities anymore. There's a lot being written if you want to see it. Another story about Grenada. Army hails the new helmets' value in Grenada. And it tells about the new helmets that were used down there. They're called the Kevlar, K-E-V-L-A-R. They look like those worn by the Nazi soldiers in World War II. They gradually will replace the steel pot that the American servicemen wore. Somebody called up, I believe, on the talk show part of the program and asked if I noticed a similarity between the helmets, the German Nazi helmets, and the Americans that were wearing them down in Grenada. This is New York Times picked that up. Another story out of the People's World. U.S. corporations are taking their aim at Grenada. It said, whatever else is said about the U.S. invasion of Grenada, one fact is clear, American businessmen are happy. A Texas businessman, Ron Adams, talked about having a jewelry factory in the Caribbean. The White House called in a group of businessmen to start in Grenada, and this article refers to the biggest, this is a quote, the biggest enticement, according to Newsweek, November 14, 1983, is a pool of unskilled yet trainable labor willing to work for subsistence wages as low as 20 cents to $1 an hour. Now, what you get rid of people like Maurice Bishop or Salvador Allende or John Kennedy or a lot of other heads of states for three reasons. One, to escalate the munitions you make and the ammunition. The other is to deal the dope. And third is to control the labor. Well, the fourth is the minerals, and you can go to the banking. Control of people. You see, by putting American investment down in Grenada now and being sure it isn't taken away like Castro took away the Hilton Hotel and made a hospital out of it in Cuba, heavens forbid, what they want now is to send the businesses there because Americans are making too much an hour. You may make $4 or $5 an hour. If they could, they'd put McDonald's hamburgers down there and have the new rockets that would propel the sandwiches and maybe use slave labor, and we'll have satellite hamburgers that'll be delivered in 20 minutes from another planet, and they'll work for nothing like they did in Dora and the Punamund and the Nazi factories for nothing. So Newsweek is encouraging building, and they refer to an island, St. Kitts, down in the Caribbean, one of the islands involved in the invasion of Grenada, and wages are $30 to $60 a week compared to $350 or $400 in the United States. That's in Newsweek. The Transducer Systems, a Pennsylvania manufacturer, can save 90% of its cost. Well, you may say that makes the item cheaper for you to buy in the United States, but the truth is that when you have unemployment in the United States, you play for the police, the jails, the 28,000 people in California jails are costing $10,000 a year. They send each one to Harvard. So you have to pay for the medication. If you have a surgery, it's $20,000. Person doesn't have money, the state pays for it. A friend just had surgery, colon removed, $28,000. The state pays for it. So if you send all the industry out and people don't have money to work in this country, then you got to pay for their needs anyway. So it isn't cheap. What you think you get is cheap isn't cheap, and we shouldn't allow this slave labor. We talk about slave labor over the Soviet Union, and we shouldn't buy parts from Russia because they use slave labor. Notice how they're advertising in U.S. News or Newsweek about it. Another story for the Washington Post. Grenada scene ripe for private investors. The White House has called them in to interest the U.S. executives into buying into Grenada businesses. The White House had 125 business leaders and government officials, and they told these leaders that if they start a deal, a profitable deal can be struck for both sides, using credit and technology from America and products and labor in Grenada that generate employment and income for them. Take the employment out of the United States, reap your biggest profit, make a state for yourself, employment and income for them, means they earn money and they have an income, but it'll be $100 a month, and that's all. Well, we're not replacing the schools or the Cubans who are giving them medical care or helping them with their own needs of literacy or illiteracy or teaching them. So it's totally obscene that they planned this invasion from 1979 when Bishop came in, and Sir Eric Gary with the Mongoose Squad can come down there, and now the president even invites the business people. Come on now, show it. Show it how it is. Another story out of the Washington Post, the island tussles over the legacy of Maurice Bishop. They don't know what to do. The first stories were everybody wanted the invasion. Oh, it's wonderful. We're so glad to have you. America is so great. Now they've got to stick with Orlando Letelier's murder in Washington or Karen Silkwood in the United States working for Kerr McGee or Salvador Allende or Martin Luther King Day and John Kennedy Airport and John Kennedy. They got to have the Maurice Bishop specter because the unanswered questions over the island. And they said, at stake is more than one man's place in history. How can they, what can they do? It's a question of preventing the affection for the fallen leader that people won't embrace a revolution again. It's like killing Mr. Aquino and having demonstrations and turning. So he wasn't so disliked. He wasn't unloved. They appreciate him. So they've got a problem, how much aid they should give, how much money. What do the people think? What do they feel? And we don't know what they feel, and we don't know if we'll ever be welcome or everyone will hate us around the world. Maybe the election in Japan is an inkling of what people are feeling. Another story out of the Washington Times, Granada, on what the media would have done. And it says a survey was taken, and Americans rallied behind the support of the president and not allowing the news media. Of course they did. This paper is written by, published by Reverend Moon. And then it quotes John Chancellor, who gave a speech, and it was published in the New York Times November 15th. And Chancellor was opposing the media being held back from seeing what was going on that was so necessary for a population of 100,000 that no news people there were 5 days. Mr. Chancellor, this is a quote, said, "A free society is defined in part by the freedom of its press, and though it is imperfect, contradictory, and inefficient, it is infinitely preferable to a flow of information which comes solely from the government." He said, in banning the press, the Reagan administration's dubious accomplishment was to keep the deaths off the television, decreasing their visual impact on the American public and reducing the death to statistics. He was arguing the Americans have a right to see the horror of war. Now, he was saying that Reagan didn't want the deaths to be seen. But what happened? The day that they invaded, they circled with helicopters for several hours, and the heads, Mr. Cord and the head of the Mr. Austin of the Army, were at the medical school with Jeffrey Byrne. They were on the telephone with Robert Passer, formerly of the National Security Council, who covered up the bodies and deaths at Jonestown, taking the tags off. They're in touch with Mr. Monica, the Republican lawyer, and they're circling, and Mr. Austin and Cord are in touch with the mental hospital and the medical school. And then over the 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Cord or Austin has come by and said, lock up the bodies and come out of there so that the caretakers are gone. I haven't read one interview of a doctor of a mental hospital for 180 people. Bang. Bombs, 4 bombs, right on the medical hospital. And as I said before, and head on the air and put in that article I did on Granada that will be published by Larry when he gets out in total, that was their target. Now, John Chancellor is saying we have a right to see it. And the reason we didn't want to see it is that they had to wipe out the mental hospital. He's saying they're concealing the deaths. They have to keep the deaths off television. You better believe when you go into a country and whammo, a mental hospital at 2 in the afternoon and don't let anyone in for 5 days, and you can't account for all those. There's 180 and 50 at first were dead, and there's a stockpile of bodies, 100 bodies, then 200, and then none. And they can't find Bishop's body, and there were stories they were fed to the sharks out at sea. You better believe I rather war is bad. I rather see them killed if we're going to kill them than be told we didn't kill them. And then another country says we killed them, and we don't know how many or how they died. The press should have been there. Yes, indeedy, they should have been there. Another story, Granada documents spur questions. This is Houston Post again. I have a friend in Houston that mails me these marvelous articles that I'm not getting in any other paper. Incidentally, that Mitchell Werbel obituary, I talked to Ted Rubenstein down in L.A. He didn't know about Werbel being dead. It wasn't in the Chronicle. It wasn't in the Monterey Herald. It wasn't in the major papers. I haven't seen the L.A. Times. It'd be interesting to see how long it takes for the obituary of a man who's written up in so many books about weapons and the Cold War, the Hot Wars, Mitchell Werbel. I wonder what major newspaper outside the San Jose Mercury is going to carry it along with that San Jose Mercury story. But this story is a Granada document spur questions, and it tells about fascinating hours that Georgie Ann Geyer spent looking over secret papers left behind. Now, some secret papers, again, are like the Lee Harvey Oswald diary, E. Howard Hunt being called by the CIA or Charles Colson, get to Artie Bremer's apartment in Milwaukee. The door is open. You get planted diaries. Gerald Ford was part of the Oswald planted diary story. Never verified that he wrote it or saw it. When you get these secret papers that the newspaper people just handed, like the list of the SLA to Marilyn Baker, who turned out working for the police and the FBI, she has these secret papers, and one links a correspondence with Representative Donald Dellums in California, and another one with a Christian organization that they were interested down there. I didn't know Marxists were interested in Christians, the National Council of Churches. If they're so Marxist, why involvement with the Marxists and the National Council of Churches? But then it goes in, there's a letter in the documents that she says, among them, a letter that Maurice Bishop wrote that it quotes, he was encouraged by William Clark's response that they're willing to accept talks on the normalization of relations. And what I wrote was that Maurice Bishop went to Washington in June. He saw William Clark, asked him to help him. He didn't go to the Soviet Union. He walked out of the office. William Clark picks up the telephone and then is the man responsible for putting Henry Kissinger on the Central American Committee. And Carrington is the responsible for Barbados, Kissinger's partner, for the overthrow of the country. What they do is sprinkle the letters to as excuse that Mr. Cord or Austin will think that he's selling out to the Americans and create the excuse for his murder. She says that maybe this letter, this is probably what got Bishop murdered by the hardline Marxists around him after reading those papers. Well, I don't know if Bernard Cord is a hardline Marxist. If he's paid $45,000 by Robert Vesco, I doubt if that is a hardline Marxist. That's pure capital cash. The cover stories that the Marxists didn't like Bishop because he was selling out to Clark are ridiculous. He went to see William Clark. William Clark calls Kissinger and says, Kissinger, I want you to be on the Committee of Central America. As a matter of fact, I think that's in Congressman Gonzalez's report, the pecking order, how Clark put Kissinger into the Central American Committee. So another story this week, another Reagan aide quits. Gergen, David Gergen, director of the White House Communications, he's going to accept a residency at Harvard University. I heard him on the radio and Channel 3 CNN this week. Gergen is a veteran of the last three Republican administrations. He's leaving the White House. He's unhappy. He's not happy with such areas as press control in the invasion of Grenada or the use of polygraph or lie detector tests on the administration staff. The tests were because of the National Security Council meetings where the United States was going to go whammo in the Middle East and go into Lebanon, and that also may have picked up the planned invasions that were documented in the Washington Post that were going to take. They were talking about entering Grenada at the time of the World Series. I mentioned it, and these preceded by several days when Maurice Bishop was even murdered or when there was any martial law. Now, why would a man who works with three administrations, who works with the President of the United States, leave because of the press at the time? This is an island of 100,000. The people are supposed to be in danger. We know they're not. And he leaves and he cites the press coverage. And the press should have been there and they should have seen the bombing of the hospital and the medical school and see what was going on. Another story, the United States says that Grenada planned a big army. This is the San Francisco Chronicle. Well, it was obvious they needed an army. You saw how they were invaded. Wouldn't you need an army? I mean, is there anything wrong with that? And then it tells that among other documents they found there about the legible notes handwritten by an unidentified author, of course, he described the deliberations of Maurice Bishop's group, the New Jewel Leaders, just before the invasion. The notes involved discussions explaining the overthrow of Bishop by charging him with fostering a cult of personality, mollifying Cuban anger, Bishop's death, and waiting with stole resignation for the U.S. invasion, the notes say, of the United States. Now, that's interesting because, again, these notes explain that they sat stoically waiting for the U.S. invasion, and Mr. Austin and Bernard Cord, the best friends, allegedly, or close associates of Maurice Bishop, had him killed. Now, Cord is getting $45,000 from Robert Vesco, and if the airstrip was put in by Robert Vesco, this was on NBC News, and he built a big hunk of that, then were Austin and Cord under a kind of mind control with Dr. Peter Byrne, their associates, and Jeffrey Byrne running the school, the medical school on the island, the excuse for the invasion. The school was the excuse. The airport runway was the excuse. It was a danger to South America. And the Barbados and Dominica request, Dominica particularly requesting them to come in when this was operation was set up by Kissinger and Carrington. All of the excuses for the invasion had direct links to the Defense Department, the National Security Agency, and the CIA. But you have a mental hospital that Mr. Austin was at the day it was bombed and stopped by, telephoned them and stopped by and knew what was happening. He's sitting with Dr. Jeffrey Byrne, who ran the Yerkes, Y-E-R-K-E-S, Mind Control Experimentation Center in Atlanta, Georgia, right very close to Jimmy Carter at the university. They're all mind experiments. Why couldn't Cord and Austin be victims of mind experiments themselves at a time when you're getting ready for Sir Eric Gary and the Mafia to take over the island again? Vesco and Sir Eric Gary and their links to down to South Korea and to Haiti and to Pinochet, Chile, and all the other dictatorships. Isn't it strange that they're sitting there waiting for a U.S. invasion? Now, they're in jail. I wonder if they'll get off like Dan White. I don't know. But they're sitting there. Are they nervous? I don't know. Now, New Solidarity had a wonderful article November 27th, 10 Tough Questions to Ask Walter Mondale. And as crazy as they are in some things, they're great in other research. And I mentioned in my article these little monkeys that Dr. Delgado or Jeffrey Byrne, Dr. Byrne, could work on. But the hysterical thing when I got the article was a picture of this great big orangutan. They have a picture of Mondale because he works with Robert Pastor and Peter Byrne and Jim Jones and the hostages. And it's a very good article with 10 questions they ask. And it says Jimmy Carter's head doctors were trained at the Yerkes Primate Lab, shown here a patient. Yerkes, Jeffrey Byrne, ran the medical school in Granada. And you have this gross, great big head of this orangutan, not the little tiny monkey that I pictured. And there's questions. Why was Robert Pastor, formerly Jimmy Carter's White House expert on Latin America, and a top foreign policy advisor to Mondale, also working with General Hudson Austin and Bernard Cord, down in Granada at the time of the invasion? I don't have time for the 10 questions. The program is over. I have a half a minute. That's all I got. I have a minute. I have more on Bernard Cord and Ramsey Clark becoming the attorney for Bernard Cord and the role of Robert Vesco also in the James Earl Ray cover-up, the murder of Martin Luther King. We'll do more next week. There's so much. We have to go to the interconnecting links of Vesco to the Martin Luther King assassination because Ramsey Clark was the attorney general at the time and he now wants to represent Bernard Cord. But I see that it's time for the blues here on KAZU, so I'm going to sign off right this minute. It's Mae Brussel. I'll be back with you next week.
The views expressed by Mae Brussel during World Watchers are those of the commentator and do not reflect the opinions of KAZU, its board of directors, or staff.